Warning, we are a spoilers podcast. At times, we are also an offensive podcast. And we are most certainly a verbally explicit podcast. So if you fear for any of your delicate sensibilities, please back up now before you reach the point of no return. All right, pussies, this is your final warning.
Welcome to another episode of Cinematic Anarchy, where today we're going to be discussing the 1993 Super Mario Brothers film starring Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. Joining me today for this episode, we have Dan from Clockout Films.
Hey, how you doing?
We have Matt and Rachel from the Strange and Beautiful Book Club podcast.
Hello. Hey.
And Bob from You're Going to Have to Tell Me Where.
I'm Blunt Bob. I'm a comedian.
You're a comedian. Okay, see, there we go. That works. I am not a comedian, so I just kind of roll with the punches here.
I was wondering that you're doing the intros, and I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't tell him anything.
I mean, to be fair, I also committed the cardinal sin of not asking first. I should have, you know, hey, what should I announce you as, you know, but no, we'll just do it in the middle of the whole thing.
I learned a long time ago, though, that you're good. Your bio is always good with the hipster bio. So okay. I'm just like, I'm Blunt Bob, I'm a comedian. And then you really think, like, oh, this guy probably is somebody.
Well, who knows? Maybe that'll catch on. You'll be Blunt Bob.
No, I am. I've been Blunt Bob for a long time.
Oh, well, there you go. Then
it caught on. It's done.
It's already caught on. So, anyway, Super Mario Brothers, John Leguizamo, Dennis Hopper, Bob Hoskins, Samantha Mathis, and the Samantha Mathis thing confused me, but we'll get into that in a few moments. First impressions of the film.
You pronounced it wrong. It's Mario Brothers.
Mario? Mario.
Super Mario.
I don't have the accent for it. I don't have the Brooklyn accent for it. Sorry.
Pronounced many ways. Mario.
I feel like
Mario.
Every movie needs that 8-bit intro with where it's like, first the dinosaurs ruled, and they're like eating, and the guy's like, man, life doesn't get better than this. And they're just like eating food.
I didn't, that was voiced by Homer Simpson, actually. That was voiced by Dan Castellano.
Wow.
I didn't watch the movie, but I've seen it many times. I've actually only seen 3 movies. I'm not a big movie buff.
Only seen 3.
Yeah, I've seen the Super Mario Brothers. I've seen Hudson Hawk, and I've seen the new Super Mario Brothers movie. Those are the only movies I've ever seen.
So wow, two of the most important films.
You've seen Garbage Pail Kids at one point.
Okay.
What?
Garbage Pail Kids. I thought you'd seen that at one point.
No, I've actually never seen that.
Oh, never mind. I guess he only has seen 3.
So he's seen 2 of the most important films and the most recent Mario Brothers movie.
Okay. I know, and he's forgetting... and he's forgetting Ishtar, of all things.
Ishtar.
I actually did watch... What did you make me watch the one time and I hated it? Was the Troma movie with the fast food.
Oh, Poultrygeist.
Yeah, it was terrible.
What?
I bet it's different, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Troma is definitely an acquired taste.
I'm not a fan of Troma.
Ooh,
but,
right there.
I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie in theaters as a kid. I was very excited for it. And I'll like to start the discussion with this topic that people try to say it's not a good adaptation. And I bet I differ, because how the hell are you going to adapt that game into a live action movie? They did the best they possibly could.
Yeah. So the Super Mario Brothers for NES comes out in what, 1985? So this is 8 years later. So we're not even a decade after being like a little 8-bit dude jumping over Goombas.
Correct.
So it's not like a modern video game adaptation where you have a story to adapt. It's literally like, this guy died if he fell in a hole or water or he got hit by a thing.
And he jumped on stuff and squished
it. And we gotta make this into a movie.
Chronologically, all we had was what? Wrecking Crew, Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3.
We didn't have World yet? No, we had World, because I was playing World when you came.
Mario World, because this was a...
Yeah, we had World.
Yeah, this is like SNES. Like, I think SNES is what, like 1992?
So we're still in the 15-bit era.
I think I got it in 91.
Yeah.
But you're still
wasn't
just
there
a little...
reference to Yoshi?
Yeah, because Yoshi's in it, so he must have been.
Well, Yoshi did have an NES game called Yoshi.
Yeah, he had an NES game.
Okay.
Also, fun fact, this is the first video game movie ever made.
Wow.
It is.
And Bob Hoskins never even heard of the game until partially through making it. And his son said, no, it's a video game. He didn't even know it was a video game.
So he was making a movie adaptation of the Mario Brothers and had no clue what he was doing.
No, he was drunk for most of the production.
From what I understand, he would have had to have been.
But that's like part of the culture. I mean, he's like a true blue, like Cockney kind of guy.
You know what's funny? When he died,
whiskey runs through their veins naturally.
I realized this guy is my childhood. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Super Mario Brothers, Hook.
Hook.
Bob very Hoskins true. Was very big in the PG, well, Disney movie area.
He's in that movie with Jet Li, Unleashed.
Where he's that's like, right. When he's the dog.
Where he trains Jet Li to be the fighter, but only when he takes his collar off. And he's like a
who was the old guy?
Gross old man.
The old man who took him in.
Morgan Freeman.
That's what I thought. I thought it was Morgan Freeman. He was also in this great movie, Heart Condition. I know Dan, you've seen it, right?
Across from Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a comedy about this, what was he, like a detective or something? Or like a private
eye? He was a cop, Denzel was a lawyer.
Yeah, and then he needed a heart transplant, so after this operation, he got Denzel Washington's heart transplanted into him, and then started seeing, like, Denzel's ghost, like, started following him around, and then it's like a buddy cop movie on that point. Huh. It's kind of like Ghost, but more leaning on, the comedy act. You know how Parts of Ghost was kind of like a buddy cop movie?
Yeah.
So Ghost meets Lethal Weapon, almost?
Ghost meets Lethal Weapon. That's a perfect...
That's actually a beautiful way to put it. But I mean, Denzel was never getting too old for that shit because he was dead.
Yeah.
Getting too dead for this shit.
Is it true they're making a new Lethal Weapon?
I hope not.
I keep hearing rumors about it.
Because he is now literally too old for this shit. Way too old for this shit. As a matter of fact, the last movie that I saw him in, if I'm not mistaken, what is it? It was a funeral-based movie with Chris Rock. He literally shit himself in that movie. So,
okay.
Was it? I can't believe he was in the first Saw movie.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're right. Danny Glover. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, because the first one's very forgettable compared to the rest of the series.
Yeah, that one doesn't stick out in my mind quite as much. Even though that's the one that...
It was like, you know, the beta version of, like, Saw. It was like, are you guys into this? Okay.
So here's the out with the new Equalizer movie, Denzel action movie series.
Yeah, Equalizer 3.
Yeah, so I guess he's not getting too old for that.
No.
Wait, are we still talking about... Weird.
They were talking about Danny Glover.
Oh, Danny Glover.
Yeah, Danny Glover.
Good segued.
I gotta keep up.
All right. Well, we should talk about Mario. That's why we're here.
We should trail it back up.
A couple leaps.
I'll get to my first impressions, but I want to hear from you guys, Rachel and Matt.
I think I might have seen this in theaters. I think my dad took me to see this, which thinking about taking my children to go see this and then it being what it is, I can't imagine. I don't know, but dad took me to see Predator. I was like 8, so... he probably wouldn't have cared. but I always remember it as being better, and then I watch it, and it's great, and it's fine, but it feels like just cyclical adventures, like there's not a real plot. It's just like, thing happen, and it's fun, and it's entertaining, and I kind of want to sit down and see if I can get my kids to look all the way through it.
Yeah, we watched this, last year, because... I hadn't seen it all at once in a long time, and I still only had recollections of little bits and pieces of the movie. Like, I've seen this scene before, but I couldn't tell you what's going on, and it was wild. I just didn't know what was going to happen next.
Yeah, and every time you watch it, you don't know what's going to happen next, because I can never remember the whole movie, in order. I always just remember chunks of it.
Maybe it's on purpose. It's psychologically designed so that you can't hold the sequence of events.
It's all the fungus.
Brain.
Like, what?
But you gotta trust the fungus.
trust the fungus.
And then at the end, when he comes back, Matt was like, wait, isn't he spread out around the whole kingdom? Like, what happened to the rest of him that was everywhere?
That must have been a terrible feeling, because you know when you stretch out and you feel great? That was him the whole movie, and then all of a sudden he's put back in the human form. That must be a terrible feeling.
I never put much thought into it because it's Lance fucking Hendrickson.
That was Lance Hendrickson?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking Bishop.
For like 2 minutes. Not even that.
You know what? Oh, yeah, also like was interesting to me.
Yeah.
He plops into
the chair. Two years later, they made the Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, that's right. Wasn't he Raiden in Mortal Kombat?
No, it was.
No.
But I just think it's interesting that. People love to trash the Mario movie, and especially talk about how dated it is, but the Mortal Kombat movie is still praised to this day.
I like it better than the Mortal Kombat movie. For sure. I can't see anybody saying the Mortal Kombat movie is better.
I'll rewatch Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo all day long before I'll rewatch the Mortal Kombat movie.
At least this movie, it's got like a camp charm to it, so it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's tongue-in-cheek, so to the point where making fun of it and trashing it is like almost obsolete.
Well, that's how cult films work.
We know it's stupid. It's freaking two plumbers going after like...
I don't think it's stupid at all. I think it's pretty genius. Because, all right, you got this game, and... It starts off like we're saying. There's not a whole lot of context to the story when they made this. So it's a Italian plumber from Brooklyn, a fat Italian plumber from Brooklyn, hopping in pipes, stomping on heads, tripping on mushrooms, jumping up poles. I mean, how do you adapt this into a live action film?
There was not enough Goomba head stomping.
Don't forget that he eats flowers and then shoots fireballs after eating.
Yeah.
That's just...
He shoots them out of his nose, too, because it goes like this.
That's just Italian acid reflux right there. That's all that is.
I just want to... From all the garlic.
I want to know what happened in the room when the guy was like, listen, I got the setup, okay? The meteorite hits the Earth. It destroys the dinosaurs, but it doesn't, actually. It creates an entire alternate dimension, and it sends them over there, and it keeps us over here. And that's the setup for the movie.
And the only way to get into it is through a pipe that two plumbers find.
Right. Underneath New York.
Also, another reason this is not ridiculous and stupid is because Neil Gaiman completely bit off the plot of this movie.
Or what?
Hold on, let me drop a mic real quick. All right. Neverwhere. When I first read Neverwhere, now I read the book before I watched the TV show, because Neverwhere was originally a BBC TV show and then he adapted into a novel afterwards. When I first read the book, it reminded me so much like of the Mario movie. And he wrote the book in 96.
Mm-hmm.
Now the TV show was first. Yeah. So the TV show came out in 96 as well. So to me, Neil Gaiman saw the Mario movie and he's like, wow, that's cool. Let me make something like it. So he wrote Neverwhere. I mean, like the TV show is literally them walking through tunnels under the city. And the character Dor was basically Daisy.
I've never heard of this, actually, until you just brought it up.
You've never heard of Neverwhere?
Uh-uh.
It's a great book.
I heard they're finally going to adapt
it into a movie. I've been waiting years for them to do that.
There's a graphic audiobook that's read by a whole bunch of really big actors. It's really good, too.
I read the graphic novel as well. It's okay.
I think the most outlandish thing in this entire movie is that there are plumbers who will show up immediately and who cannot find work.
I was thinking mushrooms that lay eggs.
Well, I mean, no. It's the plumbers that show up right when you call them.
I 100% agree with that.
We're on our way. Oh, what?
There,
no,
there are
that's
mushrooms
not real
that
life.
Look like an egg, and they explode, and tentacles come out. So
it's not that just they show up on time. They compete to show up the earliest.
I got that far out there.
I got a clog in my toilet. I can use these guys right now.
Right? Just calm John up.
I'd like to ask Rachel and Matt, do you agree with me on my Neverwhere theory, by the way?
I think it's been a while since I've read Neverwhere, but it's pretty similar. He's traveling through the underground, like the London underground.
Yeah.
So it's similar to like New York. If they were going through the subway tunnels, it would be the same thing.
Yeah, it's a compelling argument.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I needed to hear.
And then in 2003, validated. Simon Green writes something from the Night Side, where the Night
Holy
Side is an alternate dimension.
Holy shit!
But that one's in London.
Oh my god, somebody else has read that series?
It's a good series.
Oh yeah, we got a stack of them over here.
Yeah.
Dude, I haven't read the past few, but I read up to, especially after the whole war happened, I read a few after that. But, oh my God, I was so obsessed with that series. I knocked out each one of those books in, like, days.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're very good, and I think we might cover them on the podcast.
But very dramatic, yeah.
Yeah. They're over the top noir.
Noir, and they are a knockoff in Neverwhere.
Yeah. So there you go. If you don't have the Super Mario Brothers movie, you don't get Neverwhere, and you don't get Something from the Night Side.
It's funny when you mention the novelization of Waterworld. I too own a novelization of a Kevin Costner movie, and it is Robin Hood because. It's Robin Hood. Alright, somebody called me, screwed everything up. But it's because Simon Green wrote it. Novelization.
Okay.
Nice. I love it when random authors write novelizations, like legit authors. Like Terry Brooks writing the episode one, like Star Wars episode ones by Terry Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really? Terry Brooks wrote those?
He wrote the first one.
The first one? He should have done the whole prequel series.
I know. Well, we have to talk about Mario eventually.
We do. We should. We should.
Chris, all right, Dan, say something nerdy about Mario.
We're not getting back to it.
Dan, say something nerdy about Mario.
Okay. Well, it's funny you bring up like Reframe Roger Rabbit because Robert Zemeckis was actually attached to direct this before Rocky Morton was attached. And they were originally going to have Dustin Hoffman play Mario at some point. It was going to be Dustin Hoffman and Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks in his prime would not be a bad Luigi.
No, he
wouldn't.
But he's not John Leguizamo.
Right.
No.
I had an issue when they announced the cast of the new movie. So they say Charlie Day was perfect choice. But it's like Chris Pratt, I wasn't sure. And I'm like, we need an authentic cast. Even Bob Hoskins isn't even Italian. And Leguizamo is Hispanic. But it's like, I would want to see a Mario movie. I have two casts I would rather have seen in the new one. Well, perfect cast, Danny DeVito and Charlie Day. Perfect cast. But I also would like to see De Niro as Mario and Joe Pesci as Luigi. Or
but wouldn't it be the other way around?
No, you gotta have De Niro as
But Joe Pesci's the shorter one.
I was gonna say you're gonna have to give Pesci some lifts.
It don't matter.
Stilts.
Mm.
And my other choice would have been John Favreau as Mario and Vince Vaughn as Luigi.
I could actually get behind that. That's a good one. Yeah.
But it would have been great to me to actually have an Italian Mario. I love Bob Hoskins. Bob Hoskins is one of my favorite actors of all time. And he did a great job.
Some of his his more underground stuff. Well, not necessarily underground, but his more unknown stuff. Like Mona Lisa. He was actually nominated for an Oscar for his performance in the movie Mona Lisa. And I would actually highly recommend that movie. It's a very good crime film. There was also another movie he's in. He's very, very, very great in called The Long Good Friday. And that's actually pretty good viewing for tomorrow.
Long Good Friday. That was very, yeah.
What about
okay.
City by the Sea?
Bob, you're Jewish, so I forgot. Because you always say you're Italian, so I always assume that you follow Italian Catholic.
Look, you know one thing about me? I don't believe in black and white. I am one thing, and I'm something else. Because my dad's Jewish, my mom's Italian, so I'm both. You're Irish, so what are you talking about?
That's true.
But you and I are both half Italian, half-ish.
Half-ish.
I'm mostly ish.
Irish. What about City by the Sea, Dan, with by Kevin Spacey, the Bobby Darin movie? I thought he was good in that.
Oh, yeah. He was good in that.
Oh, and we can't forget about
it. I wanted to rewatch that recently.
Don't try to stop me, Sims. Don't try to stop me.
No.
It's funny that him and Dustin Hoffman were in Hook together, and you said that Dustin Hoffman was considered for Mario.
Yeah. I'm glad I mean, as much as I love Dustin Hoffman, I probably could have pulled it off, but I see him more as a Luigi or a Koopa. I think he would have been a great Koopa.
He would have been an amazing Koopa. He's a phenomenal actor. He's also a little too Jewish.
Yeah, I don't think that I could picture him as Mario at all. Star power is definitely there, but it's
Luigi. We gotta save the Mushroom Kingdom, Luigi. We gotta do it, Luigi. I don't know, it's not a good decimal.
Oh, that was pretty good. No, I feel like the people they got to play it are that it was good. It's fine. And when I think about this movie, I think about those two. And I don't wouldn't want anybody else.
I mean, we already
they don't look like brothers, though.
Authentic Italian as Mario, and it was the first Mario, the first live-action Mario ever, and I'm talking about Captain Well Ben, right?
Right. This is audio. Yeah. They can't hear me putting my arms up. I don't know. As much as I love Bob Hoskins, Lou Albano will always be Mario to me.
Yeah, that's where my mind goes first at all times. Just Lou Albano. Mm. You know, just...
Well, and can I say one thing? Movie, by the way, Luigi's adopted in the movie.
He was adopted in the movie?
Yeah.
When did they mention that?
They talk about that at the dinner scene, because Daisy's like, I grew up at the church, I got abandoned at the church, and he's like, oh yeah, Mario raised me. Like,
I thought he was saying that they were both orphans, him and Mario raised him.
Maybe. It's always kind of gray. It seems to kind of open to interpretation about the rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of it.
The other way. Like, Luigi was born, and then their parents died, so Mario raised them.
Yeah, could be two different
ways, too.
Because that's later how we on got the news, earlier Spanish on the movie, accent. Like, he's like, you know, Luigi's always like, why are you always talking about tools, huh? And then Mario's like, you know, I got him from Pop. He got him from Grandpa.
Mm.
That is like
that's what I always assumed.
Moment in the movie.
I thought it was the TV so as a TV like, stand.
Like family adventures and passing down like things.
I remember the scene where he's complaining. TV stand section where he's got his TV, but it's on the broken TV. It's like, oh,
remember the scene where he's complaining about. Sorry, this is hard having five people in a podcast.
It's the slight delay. Don't worry about it.
That's why it's called Cinematic Anarchy.
Oh,
wouldn't have it any other way.
But I love the scene where they're fighting about. Well, Mario's complaining about the price of water, bottled water,
$3.
It's like, wow.
Everybody's got bath water. $3.
I mean, a plumber would complain about the price of water, right?
He's always so good. Like, his delivery is always so good. It sticks out to you. Like, every line.
Yeah, because he's never phoning it in. He's always like, I'm Bob. I'm here. I'm going to give it my all.
I don't know. This Poland Springs is delicious.
Right? I was locked for a minute.
Right about when he gets the water, isn't that when we first meet Iggy and Spike, the 90s dumb duo?
That's what I'm talking about. Like, getting like so many of the characters from the games are in it. They did a good job playing them in.
I like that.
They
spend most of the film being just the two dumb guys bantering back and forth. Then they get evolved, and they're technically still the two dumb guys. They just somehow have Joey's word of the day, toilet paper. Just rattling off every big word that they can think of.
Oh, yeah, also, the get smart scene.
Another thing about this movie is that I'm pretty sure this is the first time they revealed their last names, and Nintendo made it canon.
Mm-hmm.
That they're Mario Mario and Luigi Mario?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how they
I love how people like, talk about that scene and focus more on the dialogue and not like the hooker's like heel going into the cop's shoulder. And he's just pretending like nothing's there.
Yeah. Somebody breaks a glass and it gets all over the book in front of him. And there's a lot happening in that scene.
Chris, what were your first impressions of this film?
I watched this film a long time ago. My first impressions today are first impressions back when I first watched it.
I guess a little bit of both.
You're talking about a kid that's been playing Mario since Mario first came out, like the
same.
Consoles,
I
like the big
this at least once a year. So
the big stand-up arcade machines. So I was really, really happy that the film came out. I geeked out about it when I was a kid, and then I can't say that I watched it too much. I mean, I had a VHS cassette, or 8 or 9, that I wore the fuck out. I watched it a lot when I was younger. A lot. So, I love the casting, honestly. Yeah, the story's a little disjointed, but obviously all that behind-the-scenes rewriting, and because this is supposed to be a much darker sort of cyberpunk film, and then Disney got a hold of it, got a hold of the distribution rights, and they're like, no, we're going to gear this more towards the kids, not towards the teens that you're aiming for, and so all the rewrites that had to happen just sort of, I guess, took away quite a bit from the story.
Yeah, because when they were in the original writing process, that's what signed all these big name actors on board, because they thought they were doing like this intelligent satire, social satire, because that's what they were doing with Koopa, was they were like doing all these like kind of like political statements and you know, tyranny.
I believe he was President Koopa in this. Not King Koopa.
Yeah, he was pretty much President Koopa. So
they did remake the the whole Koopa storyline into its own series. It was called the Donald Trump presidency.
I mean, just look at him. Like, literally Donald Trump.
Also, Dan, you've not been playing Mario.
What?
I think they're just gelled spikes.
Oh, yeah, there.
Yeah.
You've not been playing Mario since Mario came out, because you and I are the same age.
Oh, yeah.
The first game I got was Super Mario World. I've been a
Mario fan for life.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But Chris said he's been playing Mario.
1988, 89, when I was like 4 years old.
My first game was Super Mario World, and then my dad would always take me to an arcade whenever he took me to his office in the city, and he always take me to the arcade. We'd play the original Mario in there, and then we would go to this hotel in Ocean City Motel, and they had a game room, and the game room was literally a ping pong table and a Donkey Kong machine.
That machine that I used to play was sitting in a laundromat up until 5 years ago.
Wow.
So there was a laundromat that was maybe one town over from where I grew up, and it was there up until about 5 years ago. It was in good condition. The guy kept it up, and I don't know what he did with it. I should have asked. Where'd it go? He probably sold it to somebody that was interested. Like, yeah. Hey, you know, nobody's playing it anymore. Probably. The original stand-up cabinet? Yeah.
I want a Galaga machine, honestly, though, if I were to buy one.
Fair enough.
That would be an awesome movie, by the way.
Galaga?
Galaga?
Yeah.
How come we've never had a Solid Snake?
Yeah, well, it's called Escape from New York.
Yeah, there you go.
I think John Carpenter was already there beforehand.
I love a lot of the inspiration the two have had on each other, the Metal Gear Solid and Escape from New York.
Direct That's inspiration, true. I think.
It's almost parallel.
Well, was Metal Gear first?
From the original Escape from New
Metal
York?
Gear for, Metal Gear for the NES was first.
Yeah, so then they made the Escape movies, but then the game kept referencing the Escape movies as well.
Right.
They even had a character. They had a character named Snake and a character named Plissken.
See, I wasn't that dude too deep in it, so.
Oh, I used to work at a call center, and I had nothing to do all the time, so I would just scroll through Wikipedia, and I would spend hours just like looking.
Actually, Escape from New York came out before Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, Escape from New York was 81, and Metal Gear.
It had 6 years on it. The original Metal Gear was 1987.
So I guess it was always, Metal Gear is always drawing from the Escape movies.
Oh.
There's a lot of video games we need to see, and I really think now that we have this new Mario movie, like, think about it right now. This is how close we are to a Smash Brothers movie. We got Pikachu, we got Sonic, we got Mario, Luigi, Donkey Kong, Bowser, Peach.
Well, we just need Link. Because since the new Mario movie made so much money, they did greenlight a Zelda movie, finally.
And I'm hoping a Luigi's Mansion.
And a Luigi's Mansion, hopefully.
Bring back Saturday morning cartoons. You know, make it a series.
They should really... I think they should have Chris Pratt take over the video games, too.
What?
Yeah, instead of doing the Waka Waka.
I hate Charles Martinet. He ruined my childhood.
And why was that,
Bob? He's from Brooklyn! Why would he sound like it to me? It makes no fucking sense. He's from Brooklyn. He should sound like...
I know this one. You know why it's-a-me Mario? It's Itsumi Mario in Japanese, which means Super Mario.
Itsumi so is the Japanese word
it's
super.
Itsumi Mario is a play on the Japanese word Itsumi or Itsumi Mario.
That makes even less sense now. So he's he's supposed to be from Brooklyn.
What, Bob?
Speaks with an Italian accent and speaks in Japanese.
There you go.
Tell me we got this Brooklyn Italian plumber and he's speaking Japanese.
Yes.
Got it.
I'll do the video games. Martinet's done. He's retired. I'll do it. I'll go, oh, it's a me. Let's go.
I don't know if I want Chris Pratt to take over, though. There's got to be somebody with a good Brooklyn accent.
Brooklyn accent. I don't care.
Got to be somebody.
So, first impressions for me. I don't remember... first impressions for the movie itself, but I remember first impressions for the trailer. I remember seeing the trailer in the movie theater, I forget what we were going to see. Probably something 1992, 1993. Pick any movie.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park actually came out a week later after Super Mario Brothers.
Angus!
Forget what came out in nine. What else came out in nine? Anyways, beside the point. We were watching the trailers, and it was this... I remember it being like the weird, creepy music from the I Got the Power. But it wasn't like the dance part. It was like the... part. And it was like showing like flashy images of like sharp teeth and the Goombas and everything. And I didn't know what I was watching. I thought I was watching a horror movie. So I started like shutting my eyes. And then I was like, this is fucking scary. What the hell is this shit? And then I heard them.
You were vulgar as a child.
And then I heard the words, they're brothers. And then I heard Mario. And then I opened my eyes like, whoa, what? There's a fucking Mario movie? Holy
fuck. Wow, yeah.
And then it was the shot of them in the elevator. And I'm like, God, Mario, the movie. This is amazing.
That's how a 7-year-old you talked?
Yeah, I talk like a sailor ever since I was three.
It just came out that way.
It's the upper.
Wait, are you Italian on your mother's or father's side?
Both. I'm equally Italian and Irish. So,
oh wait, so both sides are half Italian, half Irish.
Both my grandmothers are full blood Italian, and both my fathers are Irish, and both my grandfathers are Irish.
So you're telling me you had an Italian mother to let you talk like that?
Yeah.
My mom would smack me in the face with a shoe.
It's the Irish override. It's fine.
And she'd be cursing at me while she did it. Don't you fucking talk like that.
So where do you think I learned it from, Ma?
I heard it from you. It's the way Dad talks to you.
That also bothered me, that Charles Martinet played the father of Mario in the new movie, trying to say he's the father. If anybody, it's Lou Albano.
Lou Albano is the father of all live-action Mario.
Lou Albano, it's funny too, because the two most authentic Marios to me were Lou Albano and Bob Hoskins, and they were the only two live-action ones to this day.
Lou Albano got to bust ghosts with Ernie Hudson. That makes him even more badass.
But also, I don't think we're ever going to see another live-action Mario.
No, because I think they're too afraid, so everything's going to stay at him.
Yeah.
But like, and also, let's not forget that Danny Wells was the best Luigi.
He was. Every time I think of Luigi, I think of Danny Wells' voice. Like, hey, Mario! Hey,
oh. Oh, fuck you, Luigi.
Verbatim.
See, this is why, like, my brother said to me, he's like, did you just say fuck? I'm like, yeah, they didn't give a shit in the 80s. They said fuck on a Saturday morning kids show. And, yeah, like...
When I saw this trailer, I was enthralled by it. I liked like the more grown up badass imagery of it all. And there was like explosion, car chases, monsters, and
it's the 90s.
People shit on this movie for detracting itself from the games, and I'm like, but that's what I liked about it. I was able, even as a kid, to be like, this is the movie version, and those are the game. Like, I was able to kind of like separate the two and appreciate the movie for what it is and what it was trying to do.
I'd like to back up your point with an example. Every generation has an adaptation of The Last Man on Earth, or I'm Legend. Sorry, the book I'm Legend.
Yeah.
Last Man on Earth was the first one. Then you had Omega Man. Then you had I Am Legend, and apparently we're getting a sequel now, which is dumb. But to me, each version kind of represents the time period. Like, Omega Man is super 70s.
Charlton Heston, yeah.
But if you look at Mario, it's a 90s movie.
Like super 50s.
This is a 90s movie. This is where you have to be, like, you have to put on your 90s and watch it. You can't watch it as 2024 watching a 90s movie, because you're going to be like, this is, well, I don't get this. You have to be like, no, you don't understand. This is the 90s. Where they do one of the most 90s combination of tasks, where he goes to a payphone and checks his answering machine from the payphone.
You never had to do that?
The 90s was a beautiful time, and I have a lot of nostalgia. I've literally downloaded, like, a Windows 95 simulator.
For real?
I mean, we cover a lot of 90s TV for this very reason, because I really appreciate, like, the campy naivete of the 90s, where it's like, they could make a movie like this where it was like super tongue-in-cheek, but also slightly serious, but also just funny, but also referencing a like a video game, and it worked. Like, you could put that together, and that was fine. And you didn't have to chase it with that little bit of irony. Like, it didn't have to end with, like, I don't know, you get a lot of irony once you get past, like, 2004, where it's like, we have to be just that little bit, like...
Cynical.
Cynical. We have to put a little bit of cynicism. But no, we just have to, like, trust the fungus.
Casual optimism.
Yeah.
That needs to be a hashtag. Hashtag trust the fungus.
Trust the fungus.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'll start the hashtag when we release this.
Of all time. Two of my favorite movies of all time are Super 90s, which is the Mario movie and Hudson Hawk.
Oh, Hudson Hawk's amazing.
And lucky for you, there's the only two movies you've seen.
Exactly. That's why they're my favorite, because I don't, the only ones I've seen.
Yeah, Hudson Hawk is a very... It's super, like Bruce Willis timing himself with songs is like...
Oh, yeah.
It's a heist movie.
A ridiculous premise, but it's entertaining.
That movie That movie, Hudson Hawk, is literally the reason that I had my first cappuccino. So.
Me too! Me too! Right. So, I got a buddy who is friends with Andrew Briniarski, you know, Leatherface. Mm-hmm. He was Leatherface in, like, the 2000 movies. And he's really proud of having been in Hudson Hawk. And to me, he's one of the best parts of the movie, Butterfinger.
Oh, okay.
And he said, one, it was the most expensive movie ever made at the time. And two, he always appreciated how Bruce Willis took a chance on him, because all their fight scenes were together, and he's, like, so much bigger than Bruce Willis. And he said he was like a nobody at the time, and Bruce Willis took a chance on him, letting him play that part.
Wow.
But he's super proud of having been in that movie. Now, my friends and family love to make fun of me for liking that movie.
Oh, no. That's a great movie, though.
It's a good movie.
But it's like, it's another example of, like,
you're among friends.
It's an ideal, sorry.
No, Matt just said you're among friends.
Oh, good. But it's the ideal, like, back to, you know, just like the Mario movie, their ideal example of, like, what was great about the 90s.
You will never get a movie like this ever again.
Mm-mm.
No.
Ever. Because this is, like, this is what you call, I like it when movies do this. And they, when something's, like, too on the nose of an adaptation, it's almost kind of boring, you know what I mean?
Just the concept. It's very original. The concept that a meteor hit the Earth and split us into two realities.
The fact that the filmmakers, like, got creative and took liberties to try and make this a reality is something to be, like, you know, complimented on. As I'm looking for Super Mario Brothers movie t-shirts that you can find on smbmovie.com. There's a one that's called Plumber Alert.
They had the impossible task.
I have to get this now.
But they had the impossible task of trying to make sense of something that was so absurd and vague and ridiculous, and how to turn that into a movie and actually have a story behind it.
Yeah.
A thin story. And they did a story. And
I loved all the attention to little details. Like, there's a lot of little details in this movie, which is always makes it fun in the rewatch. Like, the Ba-Bomb is wearing Reeboks. Yeah, when you see the bottom of his shoes, it says Reeboks, and it's got a little Swiss flag on it. And just that's what I always appreciate about these kinds of movies in the 90s, is there's always, like, there's always a tongue-in-cheek joke somewhere going. Like, when they're driving the police car and there's a body on the front of one of them, like a skeleton, like they've rammed it and it's just stuck to the front. Like, I loved the whole police, and then the prison scene where they're in, like, dog kennels, where we get, like, a huge info dump from the guy above us.
Toad.
Like, they couldn't figure out how to work that in, so the guy's just like, here's the entire premise of the movie and the world. And
rest in peace, Mojo Nixon. Which, he passed away earlier this year.
Just passed away recently.
We were just saying the same thing.
No. And he got turned into a Goomba, which I love the Goombas so much.
With the tiny heads.
With the tiny little heads. And then he got the dance.
Too, that the Toads and the Goombas were basically the same thing in this movie. They didn't have, because Toad was a Goomba.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he turns into, like, he has a different style head, but that's about it. Yeah.
Well, and the king is King Bowser.
Well, he's Koopa.
Koopa's the politician. But yeah. Lance Henriksen plays King Bowser.
Oh, that is right.
Who's the fungus guy.
They named him. Yeah.
So the name got mixed up a little bit.
Wait, because Koopa, you know, they call him Bowser now, but he used to be Koopa originally. No, I mean, I'm looking at, according to Google, it says that Dennis Hopper's credited as Bowser.
I looked it up on IMDb, because I saw on Lance Henriksen's, like, filmography, it had him as King Bowser in this movie. So I was like, wait, did they get the name mixed up?
On the wall it says Alec
Dennis
Koopa.
Hopper was credited as Koopa.
Yeah, and it says Alec Koopa on the wall because they're painting over it at the end, and it's got his picture.
According to Wikipedia, it's Lance Henriksen as the King. But you said on IMDb it's King Koopa? King
Bowser. Yeah, King Bowser.
Or King Bowser. But the description on IMDb says evil dictator King Koopa, not President Koopa. Because he's credited as King Koopa, and then Lance Henriksen's credited as King Bowser.
Yeah, I just think a couple times during the movie they referred to him as President Koopa.
Yeah, I always remember them saying President Koopa throughout the whole.
Also, I'm very upset that Anthony Scapelli has never made an appearance in the games because he's such a prominent villain in this movie.
I mean, he's the real world villain, yeah. Why didn't they ever make him like canon?
I mean, you could have included him in the Wrecking Crew.
Because he was kind of Spike from Wrecking Crew, yeah. But they used him in they used that version in Super Mario Brothers 2023.
In my Mario script that I sent Dan like over a year ago, and he hasn't read yet. I made Spike and Wario the same character.
What you need to do is make like a Super Mario Crazy Taxi crossover where he's constantly trying to race Scapelli to different jobs.
So I don't want to give away, you know, my script, you know, give it to people for free. But I had written a much darker take on Mario. Okay. And my goal was to do a performance to make Bob Hoskins proud. Okay. But I definitely did a darker take, and it was going to be a trilogy. The first one's called The Plumber, the second one's called The Doppelganger, and the third one's called The Brother.
So Luigi doesn't come until the end.
No, and the third one, because the first one's all about Mario, second one is about Wario, and the third one's about Luigi.
Ah.
Now, Dan, you're interested. Now you're interested after sending you the script.
You never pitched it. You're just like, here's a script.
You didn't ask. I just said I wrote a Mario script. It's a short. How long does it take to read it?
When you have ADHD, it's a little hard.
But I mean, the Mario movie, though, was a big inspiration for me. And part of the reason I wanted to do it is because I felt bad that Bob Hoskins hated the movie so much. And I wanted to make a movie that he would have been proud of.
I think it was the directors that he had to work with that made him miserable during the entire movie. And the fact that he broke a finger, didn't he, during the film? John Leguizamo slammed his finger in the door.
Yeah, two brothers in a van. And then during one of the van... That was actually a Rick and Morty reference. But during one of the van driving sequences, Bob's hand was rested on the doorway of the van. And then when John Leguizamo slams on the brakes and parks, the door smashes into Bob Hoskins' hand.
And the rest of the film, he was wearing a little flesh-colored cast on his finger.
Yes.
Which but actually
you can't
is...
really tell. It's only like in like a couple spots.
If you look for it, you can pick it up if you know it's there.
Yeah.
Flesh-colored cast. I think it was a hollowed-out dildo.
It's rather small.
They don't make them that short.
I mean, Bob's got some meaty fingers, but that's still a little small.
Well, here's the thing. It takes all sizes, Rachel.
Deep down, I like know, and consciously I know it's not a perfect film by any... But, you know, a movie called Super Mario Brothers doesn't have to be. All it has to be is entertaining, and all it has... It has three things it needs to hit. It has to have two Italian plumbers, they have to save a princess, and they have to save the princess in, like, another world. This movie hit those three marks.
I mean, there's something to be said for a movie that's entertaining. Like, every movie doesn't have to change your life. Some movies can just be your entertainment, and that's perfectly fine.
I mean, this movie changed my life. I mean, afterwards, like...
it can also change your life,
I had to beg my mom to get me a red flat cap so I could go in the woods and play Mario. Because in our woods, we had a creek, and in the creek was, like, this huge pipe where you could go into, like, the sewer. So I would pretend that was, like, the warp zone from the movie.
Did the mushrooms make you feel bigger?
They did.
You sure you weren't tripping balls?
I hated mushrooms, much like Chris Pratt's Mario did in the...
Oh, yeah, you do hate mushrooms. Here's the thing, though. They do make dildos of all sizes, because...
You're like, coming back, circle back to the dildo.
Because if a guy is smaller, they want to accommodate him, so when he gets his girlfriend or wife or significant other one that's the same size, they got to make smaller ones for a smaller guy. Well, but they make them all sizes. So it's like, you know, if I walk in and I'm like, yeah, I got a 5.5 long, but like 3 inches wide. You guys got anything that, you know, because I travel a lot and my wife, you know.
Okay, fair point. Graphic point, but fair point.
Because if it's too big, it'll be cheating. Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
I will refrain as the only one here who probably has.
Chris, you got to bring this back to Mario quickly.
You know, I love giving you the challenge to be able now work with that now.
Is there anything
you can get it back to Mario?
I'm wondering how the woman lays the egg at the very beginning.
I'm not just
that giant egg.
I'm trying to figure out now. She's supposed to be Daisy, apparently daughter of, I guess here, the fungus king, Lance Hendrickson. Hendrickson. Yeah. I mispronounced his name. Hendrickson. That's what I asked a little earlier. Do mushrooms in this particular dimension lay eggs? Or was this an interspecies relationship?
No, it's the dinosaurs
that lay the eggs. But how does that work when they look humanoid? Where does it come out of?
Well,
do they have bones? Maybe they're like sharks and they just have cartilage.
Cartilage.
And
bones.
So it's all flexible.
You still got to hurt.
Oh, sure.
Childbirth, you shoot out like a football with the humans, but they got like a big egg. But you're right. The cartilage, you can't be too compact because then you'll crack the egg and make an omelet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got to eat one of those mushrooms that kind of levels you up in size so you can drop it and then you go back down, you know.
Back down.
There you go.
Yeah.
It also makes sense why Daisy was so hesitant to like let Luigi in, you know. She's like, no, Luigi, you got to understand, you can't fit in there.
No.
You know, I do like the use of power-ups.
What?
They do. The use of power-ups in this movie I thought were interesting. Because,
like
Chris, you mentioned... Because, especially, I love how they incorporated the shoes, the jump.
Incorporated the size up at the very end as well, the super mushroom, where when they were disintegrating to go back from Brooklyn back to, King Koopa's kingdom or whatever, when they were disintegrating, King Koopa shrunk, and he grew to, like, 3 times his size.
You also notice... Yeah, both Mario movies have like the same ending because they end up going back to Brooklyn
and having a fight,
and then getting dragged back to the Mushroom Kingdom.
It's kind of the same ending. It's I don't know. I guess it's just like you got to go back to Brooklyn. What are you gonna do? I mean, because it could be like Flash Gordon, which Mario and Flash Gordon are very similar if you think about it, story wise. But it could be like Flash Gordon, where he's just it's where you live now, dude. You're stuck. But I think the interesting, because in the ending of this movie, he goes back to Brooklyn and then they meet him again. But the remake, I guess you call it a remake, right? He just decides, I can go back to Brooklyn, but I like it here in the Mushroom Kingdom. I think we'll live here.
Yeah, because they were more outsiders in the in Brooklyn, so they felt more at home in the Mushroom.
Man,
they were appreciated because they weren't really appreciated in the Brooklyn.
Wouldn't you want to know though what Daisy's doing when she runs to that door at the end?
I've always wanted to know, and Chris always asks this question every episode. He asks, "What would you want out of a sequel?"
Where do you think they would have taken it?
Huh?
Where do you think they would have taken it?
Well, apparently it was supposed to be based on Super Mario 2.
But Super Mario 2 is a dream.
I know, I was going to say, you yelled at me when I said that the one time. You're like, no, it's a dream. But
better question.
That's where they were planning to go with it. Because I love the Shy Guys. Sly Guys or Shy Guys? Shy Guys.
Shy Guys.
Well, the Shy Guys are in this, too.
They are?
Yeah, when they work in the junkyard.
Oh, you're right. Well, because in my Mario series, I decided to make the Shy Guys the villains because that's cheap. That's easy. You need a hoodie and a mask.
in the movie, in the junkyard, they were like these gas masks kind of thing, apparatus.
Yeah, but also the mouse villain from 2 was supposed to be the villain in the second movie, from what I understand from the comic book.
Or Mouser, yeah.
Yeah, Mouser.
Okay.
And then Beyond
that's not what I want.
Bort was the big villain in Super Mario.
I don't know. I think that every single movie and trilogy, it's always the villain comes back. The villain's not dead. He'll come back for revenge. So I feel like for this series, it would be nice to go to other villains instead of bringing Bowser back or Koopa back, whatever you want to call him. I think Mouser is a good idea, but also Donkey Kong would be a cool thing to explore too.
Yeah.
So I guess a better question.
Like, kind of like Mario. What if this is for Mario 2? Mario 2, they for movie wise, they bring in Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong comes in through the. It is actually a somebody that I don't know. Maybe it's Scapelli. Scapelli goes in to the other world, and then he evolves himself, and he becomes this giant ape thing.
Yes.
And then he crawls back into Brooklyn and starts like wreaking havoc. And then now this is like an interpretation of Donkey Kong, the video game, as Mario 2.
Wreaking havoc at a barrel factory for like whiskey barrels.
There you go. No, he goes back to Daisy's construction site.
Oh.
Because you need to have a construction site to have Donkey Kong.
That's true.
I mean, they could have been constructing.
So also another thing. Sorry, Chris. Go ahead. No,
I was saying they just could have been constructing a whiskey factory. You know.
There you go.
Can work with
Dan, my Mario script, the plumber, bridges the gap between Donkey Kong and the Mushroom Kingdom, by the way.
Why, how's that?
It tells the story. Read the script. How, yeah, read it.
You gotta read it, Dan. I'm not gonna reveal
everything. So here's my issue. I really love the new Mario movie. There's a few things they got wrong. For one, Cranky Kong is Donkey Kong. The original Donkey Kong is Cranky Kong, and Donkey Kong Jr. is the Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong Country.
Okay.
And I believe that's canon. Now, another thing they got wrong was they had the fight between Mario and Donkey Kong. One, it was the wrong Donkey Kong. Two, that took place in Brooklyn in the original game. My other big grievance is that it's called the Mario Brothers and Luigi's barely in it. And I think...
Whereas in this movie, they're together, like, every scene. They only split up for a little bit of time because one's trying to, like, find Daisy. They have, like, a plan. One's trying to find Daisy while one's trying to find Koopa.
Also, we didn't mention Fisher Stevens as Iggy Cooper. Koopa.
Yep.
He's great.
Love Fisher
Stevens.
He's
another nice example.
And Samantha Mathis actually has said that she's really proud of this movie and really honored to have been a part of its legacy.
She should be proud.
Yeah, but, I mean... Dennis Hopper and Bob Hoskins didn't feel the same way. In fact, Dennis Hopper, his son asked him, why'd you do the Mario movie? And he said, you needed new shoes. He said, I didn't need new shoes that bad.
No. I mean, of the roles that Dennis Hopper has played, I mean, his role as Koopa, his version of Koopa, as is one of the prominent ones in the back of my head. That and him playing Clarence's dad and in True Romance. He's got a few really decent roles, but that one sticks out like right in the top five.
What about Molly Ringwald's dad in The Pickup Artist?
Okay.
He was a good drunk. Also, I mentioned it before we started recording, was he played a Nazi in The Twilight Zone.
It was like a 1963 episode, yeah.
It was crazy because the only time I ever saw him young.
Yeah, he's one of those actors who's either 20 or like 65.
Yeah, he's always been old.
Like, he just hit one road bump, and ever since then, it's been 65. Even after 25.
Well, it's like Larry David looks the same now as he did on Seinfeld.
Larry David's always been 57.
Yeah.
For like the last 30 years.
Who was another actor I was thinking recently that's never been young?
Steve Martin has never been young. He's been somebody's grandpa since he was like 20.
You know they remade Father of the Bride?
What?
Yeah, he's
they remade Father of the Bride with I think Andy Garcia played his role.
Oh, yeah. I was not fond of that.
Father of the Bride was a remake. It was a Spencer Tracy movie originally, wasn't it?
So it was a remake of a remake.
Yeah, and I think Andy Garcia is in the new one.
Yeah, that one's not going to get a sequel. No.
When does it become a
movie? Am I imagining this, or is this real? I mean, Father... I think I'm imagining this. 2022. Andy Garcia.
They need to bring Steve Martin back for one more, do like Grandfather of the Bride.
They should do a crossover of the new one. No, do like a multiverse thing. A Father of the Bride multiverse. We get a CGI Spencer Tracy. We get Steve Martin and Andy Garcia. And they all got to team up against Martin Short.
Yeah.
Wasn't Martin Short the wedding planner?
I believe so, yeah.
Did I see part three? I don't even know if I've ever even seen part three.
I was thinking, why did I think Bronson Pinchot?
No, they made a part three in 2020.
They did?
With Steve Martin.
It's a short, though.
Oh, it was a short.
Oh.
It was like a semi-sequel.
Because it's called The Father of the Bride Part 3-ish.
Part 3-ish, okay. Shouldn't it have been like Part 2-ish?
How short, though? Because they have a trailer for it. How short is it? Well,
it is the trailer.
That's not the trailer, that's the movie.
Minute and 30 seconds.
It's a mock trailer.
Yeah.
So they never made
it. It's better than a short film. I'd rather have a mock trailer than a short film.
Leave the rest up to imagination.
Exactly.
So a better question what I was asking earlier, rather than what do you think they were going to do, what would you have liked to have seen from a sequel, a direct sequel to this movie?
I mean, me and Dan said that. We wanted Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong, okay.
Either Donkey Kong or kind of like just end, just kind of spread out the lore a little bit. I'd like to go back to what Dino Hatton is like post Koopa.
I want to hear what Rachel and Matt have.
Totally coming back.
Luigi's Haunted Mansion.
Luigi's Haunted Mansion,
it has to be a threat that matches Daisy's intensity at the end. You're never gonna believe this.
All of the parts of her dad that were not attached to him when he turned back into a person turned into other people, but they're the evil version of him, and now we have to go fight them all.
We got little Koopas.
Little tiny.
Is his penis one of them?
Maybe.
He's a real dickhead. Maybe,
yeah. In all sizes.
What if his little bits, right, were the Kooplings?
Just not sure where to go with this dick joke.
I'm not sure either, but just let him ride.
I went the way too obvious direction. Just calling him a real dickhead, and that's about it. That's as far as I could take that. I'm just picturing little Koopling nuts just bouncing around now. I'm having trouble getting that out of my head.
Yeah, they're like the little ba-bombs.
Oh.
Which, by the way, takes 7 minutes and 45 seconds to explode. I clocked it.
Also, isn't it awkward nowadays when you see, like, Mario ride Yoshi? Because, like, the graphics have gotten so much better, and Yoshi's become much more humanoid. It almost looks like Dan hopping on my back.
I'm not sure that Bob Hoskins could have hopped on that little animatronic Yoshi, though.
Yeah, that was an issue with that Yoshi. I mean, he looked super cool, but
how the hell did you fucking ride him?
Yeah, that's Yoshi's purpose. He carries Mario, and he goes like, put him.
Right. So I don't see... Maybe that was a young Yoshi, like he hadn't grown to full form yet?
That's a good point. You know what would have been cool to see as a sequel is Yoshi's Island.
Wasn't that a prequel?
It was a prequel, wasn't it? It was a great game, though. It was, I remember when it came out. It's not as good as the first one, but I was just happy to get a sequel to Super Mario World.
Yeah, same.
Trying to legitimate.
And I liked how they referenced it in the new Mario movie by showing baby Mario and Luigi.
So everybody's best and worst performances in this film. We'll start with you,
everybody
Bob.
Everybody did great, honestly.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you can. So if you're going to critique this film, what we know is that the directors really didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And that's why Hoskins and Hopper had an issue with it. And it was so frustrating that Leguizamo and Hoskins were just getting drunk the whole time. But you can't deny the performances are fantastic. And I think the writing's pretty good.
Yeah, it has a solid script, some solid performances, and great production design. And it's well shot. Okay. The only thing it doesn't have going for it was a solid direction of the story.
Yeah, I would agree.
To keep everything guided. It had all the ingredients except a competent director.
I think when you look at a movie like this, you have yourself a checklist. When I saw Evil Dead Rise, I had a checklist. Cabin, check. Book, check. Chainsaw, check. One-liners, check. An eyeball popping out of someone's head and landing in someone else's mouth, check. So a Mario movie, there's certain things I'm going to look for. And I think that, and I know, Chris, you don't seem to be the biggest fan of the new one.
Right.
I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. It's not as good as the original, but they both do have that checklist.
I have some kids that drove it into the ground for me. So it's one of those things like with like music on the radio, you know, it's you hear it once. Oh, yeah, it's a pretty good song. And then all of a sudden you realize that the song's just playing end. And at a certain point you break and you're like, I don't want to ever fucking see this thing again.
I mean, let me ask you a question, though. Would you rather see Mario over and over and over and over and over again or Beautician and the Beast?
No. 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 That's a horrible choice. Actually, it's an easy choice.
Like, if I gotta watch the same movie over and over again, it might as well be Mario and not Beautician and the Beast.
I'll deal with Chris Pratt. I'll deal with Chris Pratt. I'll be good. I'm not a big fan of Dalton in that movie at all.
Mm. Yeah, it was kind of like watching a unicorn die.
Like, I liked Timothy Dalton up until that movie, and then it was just sort of, oh.
You like James Bond? Yeah. Well, you're not going to like him after this, trust me.
Oh, no.
You know, there's some movies we try to forget. And I think a lot of us went through life recently forgetting that Beautician and the Beast existed. And I just reminded her.
I was just looking it up now.
I thank you for bringing that film up that I have solidly forgotten for about, 20 years
That's
now at least?
That's what made me laugh so hard. It's just like such a random film to pick.
Well, I was actually thinking of 4-Year-Old Virgin because Paul Rudd was complaining about what musician was playing constantly and that he was complaining. He goes, I'd rather watch Beautician and the Beast. I'd rather hear Fran Drescher for 8 hours.
That had to been pretty shitty music. If you'd rather listen to Fran Drescher for 8 hours.
What was the... It wasn't Michael Bolton, was it? 40-year-old. Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald. Oh.
That's what was playing.
Okay. Michael McDonald.
You know what, Dan? I think we should make a movie about a couple of just Mario superfans. Like...
And what would the
remember
plot
the movie...
Be?
What?
What would the plot be?
Well, remember the movie Free Enterprise or like the movie Fanboys? Like Free Enterprise about those guys...
It's just a road trip of them trying to find like a thing.
Well, no, because Free Enterprise is like these two guys obsessed with Star Trek and then meet William Shatner and he's a weird drunk.
Mm-hmm. Never been
curious. And I think it's like you and I are these, you know, 30-something-year-old man babies obsessed with Mario.
Okay, so far, nonfiction.
Yeah. Well, so when the new Mario movie came out, there is a song called Hey Mario by Patent Pending, and Bowling for Soup just covered it. And it's such a cool concept where basically it's like Mario is friend zoned. And he's jumping through all these hoops for a woman that doesn't even know he exists.
Hmm.
And I think that's such a cool concept to look at the story that way.
Your princess is in another castle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's always in another castle. That's I said that to Dan one day. I said I was upset about my daily life.
Turns into Wario.
I said to Dan, I said, no matter what I do, my princess keeps ending up being in another castle.
Right.
And then you just have a toad there being like, hey, sorry, man.
Yeah,
but here's just I think this is the chorus from that song. Mario, get your shit together, bro. You've got to know this princess isn't worth these extra lives. Just let her go. Go, Mario. You're a next level bro. And she's a jump too short when the clock is running low.
This was covered by Bowling for Soup?
Yeah, Bowling for Soup covered it when the movie came out.
Oh, okay.
Patent pending. But I just I think that the culture of Mario is something to explore than just like looking at the games or looking at the movies, but how Mario is ingrained into culture. I mean, I want to go to Nintendo World so bad.
Me too. I think I might go there for my honeymoon.
it's so perfect. That'd be great.
Hey, honey, guess where we're going for the honeymoon?
Huh?
Hey, honey, guess where we're going for the honeymoon? I bought the tickets and everything. Don't sir, I wouldn't.
Just think Mario and Luigi are coming in the honeymoon suite.
I want to do a Mario escape room.
Apparently, I mean, there's. Mm. It's a shame there's no Zelda World. Otherwise, she would have a place.
We did.
Yeah, I just. I mean, yeah, Nintendo World, you can walk around the Mushroom Kingdom. That's cool.
But there's no Hyrule version. So
they should like. They should make it like Westworld.
Hyrule a part of it.
I haven't watched the new Westworld TV show. But the movie, they had like the three different worlds in the movie. They had like Westworld, and they had like a medieval one. Then in like the second movie, they had a future world. They could do that with Nintendo Land.
They should. They could. And they should.
You could have a Pokemon like world.
Pokemon Center.
Yeah, Pokemon, Donkey Kong, Zelda.
Kirby.
That's why I think we're getting a Nintendo Extended Universe now with Mario. Because now we're going to have Zelda, and I think it's all just leading to a Smash Brothers movie.
And I'm now probably like.
I'm all for it.
Bay.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't get played to death on me, I'm all for it.
So you don't watch it again and again and again and again and again?
On a loop, yeah. I can't deal with that.
Now let me ask you a question. Would you rather watch. Would you rather watch Smash Brothers again and again and again and again and again? Or The Nanny?
We're going back to Fran Drescher again.
I'm actually going to pull up her filmography so I can keep making this joke.
Circling back.
What is Fran Drescher's filmography? I can't even think of Fran Drescher movies. Like, I know she's been in some, but...
She was in one of my favorite Christmas movies, Santa's Sleigh, with Bill Goldberg.
That one I have not seen.
She was only in the first scene, though. So you can watch the rest of it and you're fine.
Did Santa slay her?
I think I mentioned it in our...
Santa slays her in the first scene.
In our review for Deadly Games.
Well, that actually... Deadly Games?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in our review for that.
All right, that was a... I'll have to go listen to that. I have not seen that particular movie, the Bill Goldberg film, unfortunately.
It's great. You got Bill Goldberg as Santa Claus, which is funny alone because he's Jewish. And he goes on a killing spree. It's just Santa on a killing spree. And it's called Santa Slay, S-L-A-Y. And the cast is very interesting because you got Saul Rubinek, who I love. I think he's a fantastic actor. He was great in Warehouse 13. Robert Culp from Greatest American Hero, one of my favorite shows. Bill Goldberg, obviously. And then Emily de Raven, who was nobody at the time that ended up becoming famous for Lost.
Okay.
And Chris Kattan, Fran Drescher, Rebecca Gayhart.
Chris
they make
Kattan?
A bunch of cameos.
Sorry, that name stuck out to me for just... Chris Kattan was in that?
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
He actually gets jerked off by Fran Drescher.
Names are in the opening scene is pretty damn good.
He gets jerked off by Fran Drescher in the opening scene.
That's... Oh.
That's one way to open a movie.
She wanted the magnifying.
I'm just picturing somebody sitting down. Just you know what we need to do? To we got this whole film about a Jewish guy that plays a violent Santa that goes on a killing spree. You know what we need to do to open that? Fran Drescher jerking off Chris Kattan. Perfect opening.
Right. With the
James Caan is also in that scene.
What? James Caan?
James Caan is in the room. There's no budget... You know, straight to DVD horror movie has James Caan in it.
In the middle of a scene where Chris Kattan is getting jerked off by Fran Drescher.
Yeah, he didn't like that. He got mad.
It's like, this is what I'm here for?
Well, it was his wife and his son-in-law.
Oh, ew. Oh, okay.
This just keeps getting worse and worse.
And sadly...
Halfway to the big reveal.
And sadly, I feel compelled to watch it now. I feel compelled to watch it
the
now.
The strip club scene is great, too.
Oh.
That's... There it is.
So this is your holiday episode, by the way. Right. Talking about the movie Santa's Sleigh.
Yep. Okay, well, Chris, well, we're going to have that up for Christmas time this year. Maybe we can do like a Christmas in July.
Yeah, invite me back on Christmas to do Santa's Sleigh.
It can be movie number 4.
I will for right. you. Just the yeah. one that we'll do make that movie number 1. I don't know if I want that to be the movie that falls on Christmas. Just
I mean, I watch it on Christmas most years.
It sounds very Christmassy. Just very very much in the holiday spirit.
You know, it's a great one too. Violent Night is fantastic.
That was a great film. I did like that.
It brought a lot of depth to Santa, too. It like, really made you, like, it wasn't just goofy. Like, you had sympathy for this character.
Bob, you need to watch this.
Deadly Games.
I can't really see. You're all pixelated.
Sorry.
You look like Mario.
No. Deadly Games.
It's called Deadly Game. And me and Chris reviewed it back in winter. And it's kind of like Home Alone, except switch out Kevin McAllister for this Rambo cosplaying kid who's kind of like booby trapped his house with like electronics. And he
Steve Railsback plays the kid?
Huh?
Steve Railsback plays the kid?
I'm not sure.
Not sure.
He played Ed Gein in the biopic.
I'm not sure about that.
I think this is a French film. So.
Yeah, no, that's
I'm looking at.
If you look up
Deadly Games.
Look up Deadly Games, but you have to add the dial code Santa Claus.
Never mind. I'm looking at 1982.
You have to
look for 1989 Deadly Games.
So I wanted to make write an article a long time ago. Best family films turned into horror movies. Krampus, Christmas Vacation. You're Next, Home Alone.
Hmm.
I think I have more, but I can't remember them right now.
I'd be interested in hearing the rest of the list. Because I could see sort of the direct relation to those other two, yeah.
Yeah, because I thought When I met Charlie Vincent at Monster Mania, I'm like such a fan. I thought you're next. Like, she was just like the new generation of Final Girls, where they actually like fight back.
Yeah.
So we are. I am getting a little pressed on time, nearing the end of this here. So we're just gonna kind of wrap this up by kind of asking everybody nostalgia. Give it a nostalgia rating from 1 to 11. How would you rate this film?
20.
20.
I was going to say 15, but he said 20. I'm saying 21.
I only got an 8, I think. It's good. I don't know if I'd go back and rewatch this, like, voluntarily. Maybe if we were putting it on for the kids, but Rachel had to step out to take a phone call. Oh, no, here she is. Okay. Well, nostalgia rating, 1 to 11, Rachel.
For me, like, reason I'm giving it so high is because this was, like, this was the peak of, like, my Mario fandom as a kid. Because, like I said, like, in 1989, I got my first NES. And, you know, I was watching Super Mario Brothers Super Show. And I was watching all the other iterations of, like, Nintendo on TV. There was the Super Mario Brothers 3 McDonald's toy line. There's Mario. Something Mario was happening every year within that time frame. And then 1993, boom, a movie. Holy crap. So
I'll say this, though, that me and Dan would not be friends. It was like
the finale of my fandom in my childhood.
Me and Dan would not be friends if it wasn't for this movie.
No?
That's true.
Because that's how we initially bonded.
Over the film. Oh.
Nice.
That's fair enough. Okay. And my own personal rating, I mean, I give it an 11 only because, like I said, this is something I wouldn't say grew up on. I mean, this is like my teenage years, but I watched this quite a bit. Like I said, I did wear out several VHS copies of this particular film. Played a lot of Mario on the NES way back when. So, yeah, I mean, a straight up 11 for me. I'm not going to break the 1 to 11 scale for it. Sorry, guys.
I guess we're the only ones.
I'm dead in the middle.
You have to watch it again and again and again and again and again and again, and then you got to watch Living with Fran afterwards.
No more Fran Drescher. Can we send her to another dimension? Please.
She's a dinosaur, actually.
Now, yeah, just the Velociraptor, just those adenoids. All right, well, does anybody want to hawk their own channels or projects or anything before we leave?
Rachel, did you give your rating?
I did not give a rating.
You did not give a rating. I ran right over that. My apologies. What is
That's
your rating?
Okay. I think I'm going to go 9. I think I'm going to go 9 because I probably saw this in the theater with my dad, which I always like to do. And this is probably one of the first movies I went and saw, and I thought, wow, that was really good. And then I realized that other people didn't like it, and I didn't know why. And I didn't see it again for a while. And then when you watch it again, you're like, I feel a lot of feelings about 90s movies and 90s media and 90s TV, and they always feel nostalgic to me. So I think I'm going to go 9.
Okay, fair rating.
Yeah.
All right, so Matt, Rachel, tell them where we can find your podcast.
We are the Strange and Beautiful Book Club for movies and, well, sometimes movies and mostly books. We have the Come in 81 Kilo Forever Night podcast, which we're doing the second to last episode this week, and then the final episode's the week after that. So assuming we don't do any of the books, then that'll be the end of Come in 81 Kilo. So we will have completed all 3 seasons of Forever Night.
Okay. Okay. And Dan.
1 hour plus episodes.
That's a lot of Forever Night.
Almost as long as the show.
The show's like 48 minutes each.
Yeah, we have more hours of content about the show than there are of the show.
We talked about Forever Night longer than Forever Night is like combined total time.
And Dan, are there any projects you'd like to talk about?
Well, me and Bob are currently working on The Fiddler. I think we mentioned that here on the show once or twice.
Yes.
Look out for that coming soon. What else? What else are we working on? Well, we're having a screening of Slaughter Beach in Media PA. If anyone's listening and they're out there in Media PA, come check it out and support. It'll be at the Media Townhouse.
And really, really cool place, too.
Be there in late April. So look that up on the Delco Horror community page on Facebook.
Really, really cool place. It's a really nice bar. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Is there anything extra you want to add to that, Blunt Bob?
Yeah, you can find me at BluntBob.com. You know, all my content will be posted on there. I got TikTok, YouTube. Like, I I stopped doing a YouTube channel about a year ago. My last video was called I Failed No Nut November on the first day. I'd love to bring that channel back one day, but I am hoping to be doing a new podcast soon. So all the links will be posted on bloodbob.com if you keep updated. And then, we got the Instagram and, all that shit, all the social media stuff.
All right.
I don't use X really, though.
I don't use that as much as I use other sites. I've been using Threads more often lately.
I only go on there really for porn anymore. And I also think if he's going to change the name of Twitter to X, should he change the name of Tweets to X's and O's?
That's fair.
He still calls them Tweets.
I don't know why he calls them Tweets.
Twits?
I mean, Twits? Tweets from Twits?
Twits. Twats. Twats.
Oh.
No, that's what it's full of.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, and on behalf of some people that were absent from the episode, thank you, everybody, for joining us today for this episode for Super Mario Brothers, and drink some water, you thirsty bitches.
Yeah, for anyone who's listening, I appreciate the opportunity to be on here, and I probably will not be invited back, so I hope you enjoyed the time you've had with me.
Well, you're invited back, obviously, for Santa's sleigh in December, if you're around, yeah.
I will come back for Santa's sleigh.
So you can lay out the whole Chris Kattan getting jerked off scene in detail. There you go.
Yeah, he was, Fran Drescher goes, one potato, two potato, and she's put potatoes on this plate while her other hand is under the table.
Yeah, so
it could get worse.
So just wait till about Christmas time, we'll be putting that episode out. It won't be about the whole movie, it's just that first scene. It's going to be a two-hour episode just dissecting that scene.
By the way.
Don't forget, we have to review Fishing and the Beast.
Oh my god, I think we have to now.
Is this the scene where you come find me, tie me to a chair, tape my eyes open, and torture me for a few hours?
Yeah.
Now, I think we should watch License to Kill back to back with Beautician and the Beast. Because you can see
just for the contrast.
Make it canonical.
Just for the contrast to Timothy Dalton.
I'll set up my TV to play them at the same time. Just side by side. Timothy Dalton at his best, and Timothy Dalton doing something.
Rachel Matt, did you say you have a podcast about Forever Night?
Yeah.
I would love to check. It's funny. I have not watched Forever Night, but I've always wanted to because Angel is my favorite TV show. I even watched the show Moonlight and read the book it was based on.
Yeah, I have the book. It's terrible. Yeah.
Oh, what's the one Moonlight's based on?
Yeah.
It's a fucked up ending. It's very different than the show.
Yeah.
But I actually have a podcast about the show Happily Divorced.
No. No.
Sorry, Fran Drescher.
No. No. No.
Circling back.
Commit to the bit.
But no, I would love to check that out because that's a show that's definitely been on my list because any show about a vampire solving crimes, I'm in on it.
Well, and, then it's the great granddaddy of all vampire solving crimes. Yeah. So. And the pilot has Rick Springfield, so how can you not watch that?
Oh, never mind.
No. you lost him at Rick Springfield.
I've done research on it because I wanted to see the show because Angel sent me in that direction. I'm like, I need more shows like this.
You have to buy the DVDs because season 3 isn't available to stream anywhere.
It's like Sliders.
Mm-hmm.
I
have the entire series of Sliders.
I'm waiting for the third season to come in at a local shop before I start watching. And then I'm going to start listening to the podcast. Like, I'll watch the episode, and then I'll listen to the podcast. Go back to that.
Are you talking about Sliders?
No,
Forever Night.
Forever Night. Find me a Sliders podcast.
I haven't watched Sliders in so long.
There's not enough of them.
I do really enjoy the company and the nostalgia you guys got going on, so I definitely would come back whenever.
Yeah, you're welcome back whenever you'd like to pop back on.
I mean, don't say that, because then I'll show up every fucking week, and you'll be like, oh my god, why'd I say that? This guy just won't go away.
Well, I'll sick Fran Drescher on you.
Yeah, there you go.
I think she needs to come on the show now.
I'm not sure. After all that dislike I threw her way, maybe she can come on here and just kind of tear me down a little bit.
The Fran Drescher show in 2010.
Hey, she helped destroy that strike because she is the president of SAG-AFTRA.
Yeah, and we can also do a live reading of her book, Cancer Schmancer.
Let's not. Let's not. No. Let's not do that. No.
I've impressed myself with the amount of Fran Drescher references I'm capable of, because I really, the only movie, I know two things, The Nanny and The Beautician and the Beast, and everything else I have on Google in front of me.
The only movie
that I didn't know about Cancer Schmancer.
I will say there's one movie that I will watch Fran Drescher in. One.
Jack?
No. This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I will watch.
She has that one scene in Spinal Tap. She plays like the PR person.
And she is not as nasally. She's played up those adenoids because that's kind of become her trademark. Oh, yeah. She plays it up.
I've heard her talk without the emphasis, and she sounds just like a normal person.
Well, you ever hear Gilbert Gottfried's real voice?
I don't think I have.
Gary Delabate had a voicemail of him. They played on Stern. He's like, Gary, it's Gilbert. Won't be able to come on a show.
It's like, no, this is not him. This is not. You're going to have to show me video proof that that's him talking.
Also, around Christmas time, we can also watch The Christmas Setup from 2020 starring Fran Drescher.
You guys are just going to torture me with the Fran Drescher here. Just...
I feel like we'll all be tortured. It's fine.
No. All right. With that, thank you once again, everybody, for joining us for the podcast today. And I've already said the tagline, so we can just go out on nothing this time.
What was the tagline, though? Can you say it again?
Always, always trust the fungus.
And now, for a few ads from friends of the podcast.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Matt.
We are the hosts of the Strange and Beautiful Book Club. On the Strange and Beautiful Book Club, Matt and I share our adventures discovering forgotten movies, television shows, and books in the science fiction, horror, and fantasy genre.
Not necessarily good movies, though.
Oh, certainly not. We love a good, bad movie. The quirkier, the funnier, the more campy, the better.
But we talk about some classics, too.
Of course, we can't ignore our favorites, like Highlander or the 1990s vampire cop television show, Forever Night, which we are currently covering one episode at a time.
As if I could forget.
Oh, hush. You love every minute of it.
Come join us every week as we discover, discuss, and dissect fantasy, horror, and sci-fi genre classics. New episodes release every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So remember, sometimes the strangest things are the most beautiful, too.
So be who you are and love what you love. Until next time, friends.
Bye. Bye.
This is Two Chicks Talking Flicks, where we review movies. We try to dig deeper and go more in depth.
For and profound for me.
Yeah, for me, I'm just like, what? We even bring up relevant topics.
I remember from Punky Brewster that you don't go inside the fridge. No, you.
And we're here to have those tough conversations.
Mm-hmm. And she was wearing a white dress, which
was yellow.
Huh?
It was yellow. So if this sounds like the podcast for you, please enjoy new episodes every Tuesday.